You are listening to Fanthatrax.
You're listening to Fanthatrax. Flip through the galaxy of literature.
Welcome to Cannon Fodder. Here is your host, Mark Newbold.
You're listening to Cannon Fodder, and a very special episode as we welcome to the show author John Jackson Miller. John is with us to discuss his latest novel, The Living Force, his first for nearly 10 years. We talk all things Living Force and much, much more on this very special episode of Cannon Fodder. Welcome, John. It's good to see you again.
Glad to be here.
It's been about, it's been about 10 years since A New Dawn. So what have you been up to?
Well, I haven't been completely away from the galaxy. I've been doing short stories, and I did a novella for the Canto Bight book that came out in 2017. Did a short stories for both of the Certain Point of View books, Star Wars and Empire. Even did a comic book annual for Star Wars Adventures over at IDW. But certainly for the most part, I have been writing novels for Star Trek. I did four novels before the streaming era started, and then four that tie in with the streaming series books, including two Discovery era novels, Enterprise War and Die Standing, a Picard novel, Rogue Elements, and my most recent book, which just came out in paperback, which is Strange New Worlds, The High Country. Literally the day that book came out, I got the offer from Random House and my editor, Tom Holler. We'd been looking for a project for me to do that both fit my time schedule and theirs, and something that I would probably be suited for. And he said, would you like to do a novel about the Jedi Council? And I said, yeah, I have an idea, in fact.
So when you get the opportunity to dive into this era, because it's a fascinating era, not just as a writer, but just for the galaxy in general, pre-episode one, all the things that are happening, everything that ties in and leads up to Phantom Menace, which of course is kind of what Leslie Headland's doing with the Acolyte. She's kind of seeding things. It feels like this very nicely fits into that flow. What is it about this era you think that works so well for writers to really get their teeth into, which you clearly do in this book?
This is a part of the timeline I haven't worked in before. I haven't done anything for the prequels. What we know about it is, there's this event that's going to come along, and it's going to end badly for everyone. All these sorrows are coming up, but we're not quite there yet. The Jedi are not quite aware of what is happening with regard to Palpatine, certainly, but they are aware that they're increasingly being distracted from what they would prefer to be doing. They are focused so much on the distant future. They're focused so much on the distant reaches of the galaxy, the big picture. And they're also being bogged down by these little demands that are coming from the Republic and the Senate, excuse me, and also Palpatine is obviously, in the middle of that. They realize that they are absolutely, missing the ball. They're missing the point of what they should be doing. It felt to me like this was the right time, a year before the Phantom Menace, and Qui-Gon Jinn was the right person to be able to say, "Yeah, hi, let's." Get out of the Jedi Council chamber, you folks, and try to get something done.
It feels very much, Qui-Gon always seems like the guy that if he'd stuck around would have had a massive influence and difference. He would have been a difference maker in the galaxy, but he wasn't around after Phantom Menace. So to pin so much of the seeds of this story to him seemed like a very smart move. But by the same token, for such a key character, he's not in it a huge amount. You're focusing on lots of different characters and with some fantastic interpersonal relationships without going too deep into it. Which of those relationships did you enjoy writing the most?
Well, there were a whole lot of different ones. One of the things that I tried to capture was, even though that this is the first time that we actually see or hear some characters talk, Uriel Poof has never officially spoken before that I'm aware of, outside of Robot Chicken, which was not really official. it struck me that, we would be meeting these characters at a point where they will have known one another for a long time, sometimes for years, sometimes for centuries. And so, the connections that we see between them are very much, a story in progress. When, for example, one of the favorite pairings in the book, you'll see Plo Koon and Sacy Tin. Clearly, these people have known each other for a very long time. Uriel Poof and Ki-Adi Mundi, likewise. Some of the characters have known each other for a very long time. Upa Rancisis and Uriel Poof have both been around for hundreds of years. But then there are, excuse me. Sorry, it's allergy season here in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
We also have characters like Yoda, who is in his sequences. We see him with Adi Gallia, who is much younger, much newer, we have a sort of an imbalance in their relationship that I'm trying to portray, because she has been taking off of him all of these different bureaucratic duties, and none of it is making her a better Jedi or a better master.
There's a look, I won't say who says it, and I don't want to give anything away, but it absolutely stuck with me, where a character, and readers will get to it, says, I'm paraphrasing, I'd rather put the emphasis on the Jedi than the Order, which really stuck out to me. Obviously, you know what I'm talking about. So to be able to take these characters from Coruscant, and you mentioned Palpatine, and there's definitely some politicking going on there. You can see it very clearly. Why take them to Quen? Why take them to somewhere? It's out in the slice. Is it a new world? Is it a completely new creation?
Not completely new. It had been written about many times before with regard to its space station, but I realized we had not gone to the planet.
Right. Why choose that location?
Well, that was part of the appeal of it. We had not gone to that planet. It was open for me to, create a world that, we depict in the book. Yes. There's a map in every edition. In the United States, there's actually a color map in the Barnes & Noble edition, which I wish we could get for everybody else.
Oh, very nice.
And it's also available in the ebook and the audiobook as a supplemental download. I wanted to be able to take this planet and show that it was created as not created, but it was restored as a showpiece for the High Republic at the height of their influence, at the height of their ambition. And I wanted to show how that had sort of decayed, how that had sort of, the fact that they had been absent landlords or absent, just absent Jedi.
Yeah.
What influence that had, and the particular location was also chosen on purpose because I wanted it to be on a trade route heading from the center of the galaxy out to Hutt space.
Yeah.
So it was a place that was going to be under pressure, under threat, if there was a power vacuum, if the Jedi left, and if the Republic pulled back its assets. And so it all came together nicely. I mean, I suppose it could have been a different planet. I did look at other planets, but this particular one, was well known enough and yet unknown enough that it fit my requirements.
Hi, this is George Mann, and you're listening to Fantha Tracks.
It's beautifully realized when you get to the, you as a reader get to the planet, you can see from the way it's described, it's had its pomp, it's had its day, the great renewal. It was clearly a project that certain Jedi took pride in, and now they come to it when it's on the downslide. It does very much play into almost what Shmi says in Phantom about how the Republic doesn't really bother about us. It feels like it's just far enough out that it's on that periphery.
Yeah, I mean, the Republic, it's not the Republic's job to, you know, shore up these old planets.
No.
The Jedi were the ones who brought everybody there to begin with to try to clean it up. If they're not around, and they're not providing the leadership to others. And in fact, that's I think, a key as well, because it is not simply that the Jedi did all this. The Jedi led others to do all this.
Yeah.
And this is one of those things about the living force and what Qui-Gon is saying. Yeah, he doesn't really feel like the Jedi are providing much in the way of leadership to the people.
It's kind of before the unification of church and state, if you want to put it that way. There is a mention of the Republic having an army, and I think it's Mace was, no, that's not what we
do. Yeah, yeah.
And there's that sort of preloading of that. It feels right. Like it sits, because it's so close to Phantom, of course, it's that prequel era storyline. But as you say, all the seeds of it being in the High Republic. So was it interesting for you being able to seed all these things coming forward, as well as preload what's right ahead of us?
Well, we know what's happening, and we have to show a place where it is, it's ripe for the kind of trouble that the Trade Federation makes. We have to show a kind of republic that people would want to leave. It is the case in my later writings with Ray Sloan, the Imperial captain. She is not evil. In my writings anyway. She is a believer in the Empire as a response to how the Republic got things wrong. And she is from a planet where the Republic got things wrong. And so, I think that clearly the Republic is the Senate is corrupt. We already knew that. They're trying to pull people's attentions away from necessarily worthier places towards places where they just want to exercise power and influence and reward people. It's not a new kind of story necessarily, but it is a new place in the timeline for me to talk about it.
Yeah. As I mentioned, you've got some great relationships in here, and everybody gets a moment. So without giving too much away, was there a moment as you were writing it you thought, you know, this one could just stick in people's minds?
There's just several. I mean, there are several. And, Tom Holler, my editor at one point, noted online that there was one character that everybody was responding to him about while they were reviewing it. It would probably not be the one that I thought it was. And I still don't know who it was. I will say that I really, since I had so many different subplots that I could tell, I tried to tell a variety of comedic and dramatic ones that people would enjoy. I personally, I'm a comedy writer, in reality, so I prefer some of the more anic or comedic sequences that are on the planet, but then I also I really liked as you were speaking the sort of the birth of the Republic Navy stuff that Mace Windu was involved with. I know I've got a kind of reader that is just going to absolutely devour that because the captain in that situation is a character that I have written before as well. And although I urge people not to read his first appearance before this book, because it's set much later.
And his character was fantastic fun. I'm listening to the audiobook. Mark Thompson does an absolutely fantastic job of bringing that out.
I can't wait to hear it. I haven't heard it yet.
It's fantastic. You also, and again, I don't want to give it away, but there is a cameo from a very young character that we do see way, way, way later on.
Yes. Yes.
What instigated that? Was it just his age?
That was me. And I looked up the age of the character, and I wanted a character of name to sell the importance of the commanding officer involved. It is not And as I took it upstairs, I said, this is not fan service. This is exactly the sort of person who would be, recruited by this this person, and that we're talking about, his commanding officer. This is a ship that is full of the children of the wealthy, the children of the well-to-do, the second sons, so to speak, that are not going to be inheriting anything, so they end up having to go into military or something else. I realized that the years were right, and I set it up the flagpole, and Lucasfilm said, "Yeah, we're here for it," because it is not gratuitous at all. It is it entirely, I think, underscores the important figure that this commanding officer will be one day, and we will see that.
For everything in one location, daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video, and social media feeds, bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
I look back and realize that the first time that I interviewed you was on my old site Lightsaber back in 2006. Back then.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. Back then,
wow.
I think you just, if I remember, you just started your run on Knights of the Old Republic, or
that's
it was,
right.
It was a little way in. We spoke to Tom Holler just to say very recently on the show, but it's fascinating hearing how an editor, what they do and how that works and what they bring to the show. As a writer, you started out, obviously, you'd done all your pre-Star Wars stuff, and then you did Star Wars Empire issue 35, I think, and then Knights of the Old Republic followed that. Plotting out you did 50 issues of that. So plotting out that long arc in Knights of the Old Republic, which is such a fan favorite. What are the differences in between plotting out a long arc in a comic book storyline, which I guess has to sort of bunny hop storylines to a certain degree, and plotting out a novel like this, which has got a lot of moving parts, but it is a finite, concise thing?
Well, that is exactly it. The novel is sketched out from the beginning. We had no conception at the beginning of Knights of the Old Republic that it was going to run 5 years.
Yeah.
And so all along, I was having to tack like a sailing ship towards this thing or that thing based on, the artist changing or, Dark Horse having a specific need, like the Vector storyline that was not my idea to begin with, but that I participated in the creation of. Dark Horse then wanting to resolve the fugitive storyline earlier than I would have intended to, as a means of showing that the Vector storyline had impact. I'm constantly moving around elements that I will do in a novel. I will take an outline and I will either reverse the order of events that are going to take place or discard them entirely. In large measure, I don't go completely off in a brand new direction. So that is a difference. In particular, the Living Force has this challenge of so many different characters in it. I had to kind of engineer the book so that every character got a minimum number of pages, and that involves sitting with a spreadsheet and basically moving around the parts and then interlacing them properly, because if you'll see in that second section, we go to space and then we go to the planet, and we go to space, then we go to the planet, and I needed to make sure that we got back with certain characters, in a reasonable enough time frame that we remembered what they were doing.
there is, as I say, there's a lot going on. You've set a lot of, it feels like, not just in terms of plot, but in terms of location, you're setting it where you've set it, setting up the gangs that are involved, and there's a lot going on there. Does it feel to you, and of course you're a writer, you're not going to say no to this, but if somebody said, if Tom says, wow, this book's been a smash, do you want to do more? Is there more you could do with this? Not just the characters, of course, but with the location as well.
You know, always. I mean, you know, clearly this is a particular, this is a complete story. It is a single episode. There's a lot of meat in here. And so, I created, not just one, but five different pirate factions that,
yes,
you know, were active, not just on this one planet, but other places. I'm writing the dynamics of all of those. There are certainly other stories that can be told, but that's the case with all of the Star Wars stuff.
Of course. Do you enjoy the minutiae in that sense? You know, not just setting out the characters and where they're going to go, and you just explain moving it around, making it all fit.
Yeah.
But also, as you say, the location and the constituent parts. Is that as interesting in a way as writing it?
Yeah, it is. I know that I need to actually do it to make it feel real and credible. If it had just been, for example, the Riftwalkers and four random pirate outfits that were free of personality, that would not be as interesting. But we kind of have the notion that the Vile are just horrible people. We have the notion that the Poison Blades are these backstabbers. We have the notion that the Filthy Credits are business suit wearing thieves. We have the Staved Skulls, who are basically our biker gang. As we see these other groups, and we only look in on them a little bit, we can keep them straight. And again, that is part of the challenge with all this I structured the book also as well so that we don't visit Quen until the second act. The first act is all about let's meet our 12 Jedi and the villain, and not get into the additional description of detail that talking seriously about Quen would entail. We know that it's important, but we don't know more than that.
And I don't know if it's ever happened that all of the council, I mean, not just in literature, but in any sort of Star Wars written stuff, all the council are out there doing stuff together. It does. I know there's men and women in that group, but it feels like a boys on tour thing. It's got that vibe about it. And also the fact that they don't let Coruscant know they're just off and doing their thing.
Yeah. It is the first such story. I remember back in the Knights of the Old Republic days, back in that first year, where we had an appearance of the Jedi Council in issue 9, a magazine that's now quite dear because people are it's got Revan in it, and so it's $500. It's crazy. But I was getting messages from people saying, "Is this person on the council? Is this person on the council? Is this person on the council?" And I didn't have the slightest idea. I only knew the ones of name that were in the video game. And, people that expected that there was this colossal backstory for everybody. It didn't exist. Well, when I approached this, there was a backstory for some characters and there was not for some. And I just had to figure out which was which.
And has that given you immense pleasure, being able to bring a voice to somebody like Yarel Pooth that's never spoke before?
It was fun. And, that's probably, as I say, where I have the most freedom and the most fun is where I can create the personality from scratch. And I'm not having to triangulate against what has already appeared.
And behind you, you've got some fantastic books and posters. There's a Bird of Prey there. It looks fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
You've got that awesome Kenobi poster behind you. Of course, that's had so many reprints and so many re-releases. It's coming out. I think Goldstone Books are doing a hardback release of it.
Inkstone.
Inkstone. There you go.
Yes,
you go.
Available today. So inkstonebooks.com. It's a run of 500 copies, they're all signed by me. They're all numbered, and they are spray painted sort of an orange like you see on the cover back there on the side.
Got mine and, already ordered. Can't wait.
And yeah, inside under the slip cover is an embossed lightsaber of Obi-Wan's.
Oh, sweet. That's beautiful. Obviously, the TV show wasn't the Kenobi novel, but it's kind of in that area, that period of time. What did you make of the series when it came out? Like, it was a couple of years ago now, isn't it?
Well, you know, when I first saw it, every time they mentioned that there would be a series or a movie or whatever, my mentions and sales would go up. So yeah. I was happy about that. I knew they were not going to be able to do my book because it was an arrival story and we're 10 years on. Is an older character now. I remember being relieved and delighted. My concern always had been, I never thought that Obi-Wan Kenobi should leave the planet. I thought that he's in prison. He's got to stay here. This is his job.
Yeah.
And I knew the odds were that he would be departing. And the Leia portion of it, I saw that, and I'm like, okay, that's good. That's the only thing he would leave for. That makes perfect sense. As far as the actual, in total, you get to the end of the series and, it did nothing to overwrite the book. On my website, farawaypress.com, on the Kenobi page, there's a video of Ellen McGregor talking about the novel. Also, Deborah Chow, the director, they took some of the mood from the book. It's plain that if you see it, there's a major element that is something that we did, Qui-Gon not responding to Obi-Wan. That is a choice that we made after some debate, in the novel itself. I'm happy with it. I think they coexist nicely.
This is Charles Soule. You're listening to FanthaTrax.
What's in your immediate future that you can talk about? And even if you can't, I'm assuming you're a busy fellow.
Okay. That I can talk about. All right. Book releases. Just this week, I mentioned that Star Trek Strange New Worlds novel, The High Country. That is in paperback this week. So that is that is the first Star Trek novel with maps in it. Planetary maps in it. It's got a bunch. That is from Simon and Schuster Gallery Books. We also have the German version of it is beautiful. It's actually got. Let me grab it here. Oh, here I am falling. It actually has the map on the spine, which is really cool. They get the best books.
Beautiful. Nice. Very nice.
They get the best books, but yes, it will be coming out in other languages, rather in English. It is out. Star Wars. Obviously, this book is out, audiobook, ebook, hardcover on April 9th. We also have a book coming out. You mentioned that Star Wars Empire issue. Well, that gets reprinted in one of the giant omnibus editions. That is Star Wars. Legends, The Old Republic, Rebellion, Volume 2.
Well remembered.
That's very complicated, but that's what it is. And that's the only story I have in that, but I think the third week of May or second week of May. And immediately after that, the week after, something that people have been demanding for a long time. The Knights of the Old Republic is the reprints begin again. So it is the Star Wars Legends epic collection, The Old Republic, Volume 1. We start back at the beginning and fresh printings of that. Once again, that came out originally in 2015, and those printings are very expensive right now. And so those coming out again, that's going to be delightful. That is also in the month of May. And then in June, the novel The New Dawn, or Star Wars A New Dawn, comes out in a trade paperback collection with a slightly changed cover as well for that new size that's there. And that is, you know, the 10th anniversary of that book is coming up. I have more news that is coming up soon, but that is pretty much all I can talk about at the moment. And again, I've got my events here in the United States, events all across Wisconsin here this week for the release of the book. And then I'll be at C2E2 in Chicago. And I do hope to get to England at some point. They know where I am.
Well, we'd love to see you over here. Before I let you go, one final thing. Back in 2007, we did Celebration Europe, the first yes. Celebration Europe. And very generously, you sent me, I think it was the first 10 issues of Knights of the Old Republic. You signed them all. And
oh,
I sold,
wow.
Sold them off for charity. So some lucky fella picked oh, up gosh. Those 10 issues, but it raised a nice little penny for charity. So I just wanted to say
that's,
thank
that's good. It would have raised even more about a year ago after the pandemic and the Revan issues went to Pluto. It was I've never seen anything like that. And I've been in comics for a very long time. So anyway, no, glad to do it. And, you know, certainly, you know, it's a good job that it went out there. You know, folks can find me on my website, farawaypress.com. I've got behind the scenes notes on most of my books, not The Living Force yet, because I haven't gotten to it yet. But I will eventually. And then also they'll find me on Twitter. JJM Faraway is the handle. And then I am John Jackson Miller on Instagram, Threads, Facebook, TikTok, and wherever else.
That's wonderful. Thanks so much for your time. It's a brilliant book. Really glad we got a chance to talk about it again.
May the force be with you.
Thank you for joining us for this special edition of Cannon Fodder. For more Star Wars podcast content, be sure to subscribe to Fantatax Radio on your podcatcher of choice. Subscribe to all our social media at links.fantatax.com. Be sure to be checking out fantatax.com daily for all your latest Star Wars news. And you can also join us live on YouTube for Good Morning Tatooine every Sunday evening at youtube.com/FantatraxTV.
Coming up next on Fantatrax Radio, it's Making Tracks.